This is Modern Woman. Find us at modernwoman.co for further info.
Our conversation today is one around innovation and the exciting times ahead of us within the automotive and electric vehicle space. I'm here at Volkswagen Group UK's headquarters based in Milton Keynes and delighted to be in conversation with their Group People Director, Penny Weatherup. Penny has an interesting backstory, starting her career in hospitality and then undertaking roles in insurance, private equity, before following her passion into HR. We're going to hear about her life experiences as she shares with us how Volkswagen are changing and evolving, but also how we can support women in automotives, both in business and from a consumer perspective. It's lovely to have you with us today, Penny, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Rosie. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I like to, for formalities, I like to start from the beginning. And you haven't always been in HR. You actually started your career in hospitality, managing a hotel and restaurant. Tell us about how you transitioned from hospitality into HR.
Well, it was quite a long journey, actually. So HR wasn't even on my radar at the point of working in hospitality. But through a number of different job roles that I secured, because I realised that hospitality wasn't for me, particularly because the partner that I was with at the time, traditionally at that point in time, the man earned a salary and the woman partner didn't. So I'd be working in the business, didn't get the recognition or the compensation for it. So didn't think, therefore, that that side of hospitality was really for me. But what I did do was, which is a bit of a kind of a trend in my career, if you like, I signed up for a temp agency, and I was very clear about what I wanted to do in terms, which was what sort of organisation I wanted to work for. And that was one that was going to provide me with some development, give me career opportunity. And that's what I got. I joined a company which became AXA, and I was an administrator in their offices, went as a temp, secured a permanent role, moved on there through several organisations, stayed with AXA a long time. And whilst I was there, discovered that, again, I needed to make a transition into a different area of expertise if I wanted to be my skill set to be portable, so I could move amongst different sectors, not just that sector. Whilst working, studied for my professional CIPD, that's the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development, and then secured a role in AXA as an HR manager.
So you're obviously really passionate about people, but what was the deciding factor to go into HR in comparison to sort of sales or business-focused roles?
So I'd been working in sales as a regional administrator, and it was fairly straightforward, really. I really enjoyed the people side of it, so I liked leading and managing people, mainly all women, by the way, because all of the administrators in the branch network that I worked for were female, and all of the branch managers were male. But I had reached the end of that road, and sometimes I was stuck in roles a little bit longer than I should have done, so that's when I started really thinking about how I could broaden my skill base so that I wouldn't be so stuck in roles. And I therefore consciously thought about broadening that skill set, did the study I've just mentioned. The reason for moving into the into a people side of it was because, to be quite honest, I just found it interesting. It was something that every organisation needs, so therefore I was going, those skills are portable. I was single, I needed to make sure that I was earning an income, and I also a decent income, and I also needed to make sure that I could secure my future. You know, I had a mortgage to pay.
Yeah.
So that was really the driver for it. And I happened to also really like working with people. I like the development side of people. But I also like the kind of commercial side of running a business or being operating in a business where people are so important to the success.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're working in the people team, as I've done now for a long time, you're always focusing on the success of the business from that perspective.
Yeah, which is a good perspective if you for company growth, isn't it? And you mentioned that you was in an admin role at AXA, and most of them were women, which I still think we come across now, especially I'd say, you know, in automotives. What challenges did you come up against as you progressed into more senior roles?
So when I wanted to secure my first HR manager role, there was a male director, HR director, and he had a certain view about needing experience in order to become an HR manager. So I hadn't worked directly in HR. And there was two job vacancies in the HR team. And initially, sorry, there was just one vacancy. I applied for that, didn't even get an interview. All right. So I rang up the HR manager who was responsible for that post. He was a senior HR manager, not the director, but the senior HR manager, and said, I don't agree with your decision here. You haven't even taken me to interview. I've been working in AXA for X number of years. I've been doing these roles. I know the business area really, really well. Oh, I'm sorry, no, you know, you've not got the experience. And this was being reflected down through what was the kind of strategy of the HR director at the time. They then had two vacancies. So I saw the second vacancy go up on the job board. So I went in and applied again. And I said, well, you've really... And I actually spoke to the manager again. And bearing in mind, I'd given him quite a hard time the first time round. I think he thought, oh, better interviewer. we're not going to get away with not interviewing her this time. So I got the interview. And honestly, did I do a great job? I probably didn't. But I guess I probably demonstrated enough passion, enough persistence. And it was an advantage to me that they got two vacancies, not one. And I got the role. 6 months after I'd been in the role, he said, Penny, I don't know what we'd have done without you.
Wow.
Kind of says it all, really, doesn't it? So it's that persistence. Mm. And even though I wasn't aware of it at the time, about that's me being a bit persistent, it's also having some degree of belief in myself that I can do it. I could do the role. I wasn't really aware of it. In retrospect, obviously, I would now say that's what was happening.
And I think we're seeing challenges around having more women in senior-led roles. Do you think it is because of the glass ceiling in terms of experiences like you've just described, or do you think it's down to the individual not having enough confidence and self-belief?
I think it's down to a number of things, actually. There's definitely an issue around glass ceiling, although we don't really hear so much of that being talked about in that way so much these days, do
yeah,
we?
No.
I think the narrative has moved on. Hmm. I think it's much more accepted that there are a number of different factors in play. When you work for a male-dominated organisation, typically the things that prevail are a certain culture, which sometimes means that as a female, or indeed with any different diverse representation, you feel that you have to play the game that culture drives, and that can sometimes be quite masculine. Mm. So, for instance, if I was in a meeting and I was the only female or one of two females in the meeting, I always feel that you have to shout harder to get your voice heard sometimes. So that's one of the things, prevailing things, that sometimes means that women don't progress as quickly as men. There's pipelining issues in terms of female talent. You've got to grow your female talent so that they can be successful in securing those roles. Senior managers need to be sponsors and advocates for women in terms of identifying their potential and therefore being able to support them and shout for them, advocate for them when there are vacancies. So those things do still can get in the way, but the more and more conscious that we are about them, the more we put that lens over all of our decision making, the more traction we get in terms of making progress there. For women themselves, in terms of confidence, yes, I do absolutely feel that that is still a challenge for some women.
Yeah.
Because to be it, you've got to see it. So if you can't see other women progressing their careers into the more senior roles with regularly with a certain frequency, you start with a belief that's from quite a questioning mindset about those women have done it, but I'm not sure that I could do it. Mm. And also perhaps those job roles don't seem quite as appealing because you can't see yourself in that position, because you can't see yourself mirrored in it. So I think there's those sorts of things that come into play with it as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think it starts from the top going down to the bottom, because those decisions have to come from the board in terms of, you know, bigger organisations. But I think sometimes unconscious bias gets caught up in that. Mm. And what advice would you give to companies that are maybe trying to educate their board level execs around getting more females into board level positions, but also senior roles, and the value that they can add?
Firstly, to buy into the diversity agenda, which with a board can take time. we've been really lucky here at Volkswagen Group. Our buy-in and commitment to diversity is absolutely genuine from our board level. It wasn't always, but as we've grown in terms of our DE&I agenda and become much more adept at rolling out certain programs, talking about it, talking with our employees about it, every single one of my colleagues on the board is passionate about diversity. So that's you're absolutely right. That's your start point. It wouldn't have been the same in years gone by. There's a very good commercial reason as to why diversity is important. Our customer base is not all male. In fact, probably 50% of our customer base is female. Through our retail networks, that representation definitely isn't there. So it's important for customers to be able to see that the people that they're dealing with, that they're working with, that they're being supported by, represents society, really.
Yeah.
So you can, again, you can see it. So when you make that link with the customer, there's a commercial reason for doing it, which is very, very strong. You see it in all of our advertising now and in company advertising generally now. That's why they're doing it, because they realise they've got to be able to attract customers from across every sector of society. But once you break that, then you can start to move through introducing different programmes, talking with employees about it, getting employee advocacy for it, joining different network groups, getting promoting yourselves externally about it when you've got a story to tell. But you need a story to tell before you can do that. So then we've introduced to the board different concepts of external bodies that have supported us. So inclusive employers have been absolutely integral for us in terms of professionally moving on our approach to increasing and improving our diversity. All of those kind of actions make a difference. And the board are sponsors for some of our employee network groups. They actually attend the meetings.
So they're actively involved.
Actively involved in it, yes. I'm sure some of them would love to be more actively involved in it. But actually that kind of involvement does proliferate through the organisation. So we've got some very, very passionate senior leaders that are sponsoring and are involved in many, many different areas of our diversity.
I think with automotives, it's interesting as well, because with a mainly female consumer customer base and women making most of the decisions around sort of cars and in the household, you know, it's quite staggering really that there's not more women within, you know, the organisation from the business side. And I think that's obviously what is slowly changing within the industry. Yeah. You've been at Volkswagen for nearly 17 years now. Tell us a bit more about what changes you're going through as an organisation, but also the role that you play as people director as well.
Yeah. Well, the automotive industry has done things in the same way for 100 years, which is basically operate with selling cars and parts to our customers, new cars, used cars, and working with a retail network. Of course, the world has changed massively, so we now have to think about our operating model in a very different way. So we've been transforming, looking at how we can sell certainly electric vehicles directly to customers, obviously electric, battery electric vehicles, BEV, as we refer to them, are a primary consideration in the future of our organisation.
Mm-hmm.
Many reasons. And with that comes digital skills, customer expertise, all of the things that most digital organisations would talk about how we optimise the customer experience, how we measure that. Data is even more integral to how we operate our business. And with that comes a huge amount of cultural change and organisational change as well. We've been on a journey with both, particularly in both those areas, of re-educating our organisation about the culture that we need to be to operate in the new environment that is the world of automotive.
Mm. So obviously you're sponsoring our Modern Women Show on the 25th of April this year, and one of our points of difference is that we're very much advocating cross-industry learning, where we bring individuals and professionals from different industries to really connect, learn and grow from each other. And being part of that, how do you think that will accelerate the growth for the business, but also for your teams as well, culturally?
Mm. Well, diversity isn't just about the actual representation of numbers, it's about cognitive diversity.
Mm-hmm.
It's how we think, about how we need to think differently, how we need to be more agile, And to shift from an organisation that's done things in the same way for many, many years requires a big, big change. So to make that change, we need to learn from other industries. As with many sectors, you can be very insular in terms of your
Absolutely.
Learning and your comparators. And over the years, we've been like that as part of an automotive industry. And it still is, you know. However, it's slowly changing. So by joining an organisation such as Modern Women, we are going to be opening the gates, first of all, to be able to share what we can share in terms of our journey, but also I'm really, really interested to know, our teams will be interested to learn what other sectors do. Mm-hmm. Some are affiliated to the automotive industry, I know, but some are actually quite completely outside of automotive and have got different journeys in terms of their experience, but also have been in existence for a lot shorter period of time. And that's a lot of what I'm looking for in terms of not just what those organisations do, but how they do it, and also how they're coming at that from a diversity perspective. What opportunities have opened up for them because they're working in a very different environment to the one that we've traditionally worked in?
Yeah, well, I've been banging a drum for ages around sort of bringing different industries together, but it's really hard when you've got so many traditional industries like construction, property, finance. I mean, there's quite a few that, you know, almost, like you say, insular, but stay in their lane, you know, because I think a lot of people think, and company directors think, well, it's not broke, why do we need to fix it, you know? But I think life, and I'd say COVID has actually accelerated that, around diverse thinking outside the box. We were forced to do that as human beings during COVID, and I think now that's slowly starting to come into business as well. But going back to the female side of things, obviously being here for nearly 17 years, what was the female representation or the culture around for women back then, and how would you say it's changed?
That's really...
Is it changing?
It is changing. I have to say it's changing. One of the big learnings is that change doesn't happen fast when you're looking to increase female representation or any area of diversity. We were quite naive at that point in time, and we set targets that were totally infeasible in terms of increasing that. It's small steps that make the progress, and then suddenly when you break through a certain barrier, then you seem to get a big jump forward. Back then, the topic wasn't even talked about. The first time we started talking about it was when we set up the employee network group, as it now is called, which is now Driven Women. We established Driven Women. It was the contributors to that were mainly women who were really passionate about the about improving the experiences for women at work, but also increasing representation at a more senior level. We set targets. So back then, we set a target of 30%. At the end of last year, we were in senior role of female representation, we were at 31.7%.
That's brilliant.
It's a huge step forward. 30% is the minimum you need in terms of having some sort of power. We share a voice.
That's right.
Why that 30% is there. But
yeah,
of course, we don't stop there. And we then got male advocacy. So we had one of our senior male leaders. He was really passionate about it, and we started to work through increasing that. We brought external speakers in. Our programs that we run internally, so when we're looking at our succession planning, we started measuring, well, how many females are being put forward for consideration in terms of talent? How many females have we got in terms of our graduate intake? And then we also started measuring, how many females do we actually get applying for the organisation? We get more women than men applying for roles, but that doesn't translate into conversion through to interview and hiring. So what's going on there? So we put lots of different steps in. We're really discussed with that employee network group right back in 2015. And over the years since then, we've increased our professionalism and our focus, a laser-like focus on those sorts of areas, which has helped drive the representation we have today. Across the organisation as a whole, we are at nearly just under 48% female representation. So we're nearly at 50-50. Our challenge is to move more of those women through the organisation and give them the confidence and also create the right environment to believe that they can take on some of the more senior roles.
And from having that good percentage of women in the business. What value would you say that's brought to the company? They say that with equal representation from a gender perspective at board level, more businesses are going to be productive and profitable. But talking from experience, what have you seen?
So it's really well documented, I think, isn't it, externally about having certain levels of female representation on boards and the fact that they are much more productive and profitable, actually. The difference that I have observed is that roles that were traditionally male, so for instance, in our service area, so what we would call after sales, we now have two females in our after sales team, in terms of being our what we would call head of business role. We would never have had that previously because after sales is one of the kind of bastions of male representation. That would never have happened 5 years ago, 4 years ago even maybe. But we've worked with those females to give them the confidence that they can actually do those roles. And they've absolutely had the potential and the right expertise to do those roles. So they are then in those teams bringing a different lens and a different way of thinking. And they also are real advocates for female representation. So that proliferates through those areas. So I think it makes a big difference in terms of operating practices. I can't say the direct impact of having females in those areas has made in terms of the profitability of the organisation. But, for instance, a female head of marketing will have a very different lens in terms of the marketing campaigns about gender diversity and diversity more broadly than perhaps a male colleague might have done.
Yeah.
So we have three female heads of marketing across our six brands. I can definitely tell you that makes a difference.
Yeah, I can imagine. And also, I guess, from after sales, in terms of customer retention and that kind of thing as well. So going back to when you were saying the recruitment process early on, because at the moment the industry is struggling with talent shortage, and from what I've read, and you're not the only ones, this is happening also in construction as well. They've got massive talent shortage. And I think partly it comes down to seeing more individuals transitioning into the industry. What was going on with, you were saying that a lot of women were applying, but in terms of the interview process, that wasn't being fed through. What advice would you give to companies to try and, or, how we can change this really in terms of getting to females, yes, but also talent in general into the industry?
One of the biggest opportunities that we have is how we profile ourselves externally. So if we want to, it links a little bit back to, if I think about our brand advertising and how diverse that is, and particularly over the years, much more female representation in our brand advertising, it's the same for us as an organisation. So we have to be able to, we need to promote what we're doing. We will do that through we do that through our careers website, but we also do it in ways that we engage with different entities externally as well. So it's if you take, for instance, our student programmes going to universities, getting into early years talent to influence them to think about the opportunities that there are in automotive. So that external profile is really, really important. Our employees are our great ambassadors as well, I would hope to. This is a great place to work. So when they're out talking to people, they would promote it as such. In terms of the wider question around hiring, we have done a number of different things. What I would say to organisations that were looking to do that is, first of all, look at your biases. We all have bias, and conscious or unconscious, but unconscious bias is a particular topic that we have talked a lot about with our employees and certainly our hiring managers. So we've run sessions around what that means and how you can recognise it and how you might be blind to those biases. That's always there, so it's an ongoing conversation that we have. My talent attraction team are highly in tune with the need to be bringing forward a diverse shortlist, and we have consciously in the past insisted that there is a gender-balanced shortlist when we've been interviewing, and that there's a gender-balanced interview panel as well. That has made a big difference for us, because obviously you've got people there that would have a different lens on the world, so that different choices are made. Which is, and I think part that does partly, or a long way, attribute some of our success in recent years in terms of increasing that talent pipeline and getting more females through the door. It's consciousness about when we've got a senior vacancy, let's not be happy with having an all-male shortlist. You've got to challenge it. Mm. Or maybe, and we need to put other lenses over that, you know, around ethnically diverse shortlists as well. So that's external hiring, but also it's the same conversations internally. If we have a senior manager vacancy, who do we have internally, female, that we should be considering for that role?
I also think as well, it's perception of the industry without it being, it's got to look attractive. And I think that's probably an area that needs work as well.
It does.
As an industry.
Yeah, it does. And I think because of the transformation that we are on, we can now talk to many different things. So for instance, we have a customer experience function now headed up by a customer experience director. That's very diverse. And that is appealing in itself just because it's very different to operating practices of the historical way of doing things as an organisation in automotive. But equally, when I see candidates that we've hired for some of our marketing roles, which are around customer optimisation through our systems and our digital, many more females and young talent are interested in and operate and being in that space. So that is a real opportunity for us to kind of exploit that. So in terms of telling our story externally and internally, we have more to talk about than just what is the traditional perception of what automotive is about. By the way, all of that kind of digital and change and transformation does apply to all of our business areas, but it just so happens that there are some that are newer to us, which we can kind of exploit and are very relevant when we're talking externally in the marketplace about why it's exciting to work in automotive.
I understand. So before we come to the end, I really want to talk about flexi-working, which has been seen huge transformation, I'd say definitely since COVID as well. And one of the things that I keep hearing is that although flexi-working has benefited a lot of companies actually want their teams to come back into the office. As a company, a Volkswagen employing like 900 odd people within the UK alone, how have you balanced that?
It hasn't always been easy. When we were coming to the end of COVID and we knew that then we were going to be bringing people back into the office, as a board, we had many conversations about what we felt the optimum working pattern would be, because we were very conscious that many of our employees would still like the benefit of being able to have time working from home and working and different working patterns. We already had a fairly high proportion of our employees that work flexibly in some format. But it was about the split between being at home or working remotely and being in the office. And we agreed on a policy that would be 3 days in the office and 2 days working from home. And obviously that was prorated if you happen to work part-time or different working patterns. So we've stayed with that. And so we really have tried to foster the 3 days office working, not because we don't trust people, because the importance of people collaborating and learning from each other is so high. What we saw in COVID was that just fall away, and we saw the downside of people not being together. So we've really promoted that. And we took a further step, which was actually to shut one of our offices on a Friday because we weren't getting the representation in on that day. The people weren't coming in. So that automatically now means that people have the Friday and they take another one of their days in the week working from home. And it's very flexible. You can vary it. People have the opportunity to make those decisions themselves. Obviously, managers will at times be asking people to come in because they've got certain pieces of work that they might need to do. But basically, we trust our employees to come in and work in that way. The other part of your question is around different working patterns. We have a huge amount of different working patterns. My experience with working with my team is my people team is predominantly female. I have two males in my team and the rest are female. In my direct line reports, I have seven, five of whom all work flexibly. And it's not all around children. So one of my team works condensed hours. So does 4 days, long days in the office and doesn't, and every other Friday takes that day off. But it's very flexible in return, so we'll be there and if needed to be contacted. And across the organisation, you'll see that pattern as well. It's so important to be able to respond to people's life experiences. That might well be about having children. It might be having elderly parents. It might just be, as it is for some people in my team, that they've got a preference in terms of how they would like to spend their time. So they work part-time, don't have necessarily have children, but their preference is to minimum of 3 days, but have two or one day actually where they don't work. Mostly yeah. it is around caring responsibilities. Mm. So that's how we've managed it. And we're by no means perfect. Like, there is no perfection. I feel really proud that we are in a position where we're not in the same position as some organisations who perhaps took the decision to say, you don't need to work in the office at all, to now having to backtrack on that, because I think that's a difficult position to be in, to convince employees yeah. to come back in.
But I do think it's about, you know, and although we're a small company and it's the same ideal, yes, you want people to trust them to work from home and have that flexibility, but also there's so much power around working together in an office side by side, or like they call it, the water cooler moment. But there is so much value in that. And I guess it's having that mutual appreciation between the employee and the employer yeah. for them to understand from both sides.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. You know, I don't role model the smart working, as we call it, particularly well, because I like being in the office because I like being with people. The time spent during COVID at home, 100% of the time, I found very, very difficult. I've been in the workforce for many, many years, you know, and I've always either, even if I'm working remotely, I've been travelling to different offices. So I've always had that human interaction. Mm-hmm. I find it very difficult not to have it. I appreciate that perhaps other people don't quite have that same requirement. But what my observation with working in my team is, the benefit of being in yeah. far outweighs not being in.
And would you say having flexi working has increased productivity?
I think so, yeah. It's very difficult to measure that. I think every manager and leader has to assess that for themselves and adjust their thinking around it, dependent on what's happening in their team. If you're in crisis mode and you've got to get stuff done, it's perfectly acceptable to ask people to come into the office. But if you are working on topics and projects where you're regularly in and talking, it's perfectly okay to then have those conversations online and in teams. And also, people really value the opportunity to just get their heads down and get activity delivered that they need to deliver, and they need headspace to do that.
Yeah.
You know, inevitably when you're in the office, you get disturbed, or you're easily distracted, if
yeah,
you like
absolutely.
Me.
Yeah.
But I quite like that. You know, I'll happily have conversations with people when I probably should be doing another piece of work, but then that's up to yeah. me how I work, isn't it? You know, I still meet my deadlines, I think.
That's good. That helps. So just a couple more questions sort of finish off really about you. So what would you say keeps you motivated?
Oh, the different challenges that come up all the time in our organisation. So really exciting challenges we've had over the last couple of years. So the cultural change that I referred to earlier, that for me personally, being able to lead the team and the organisation with the expertise of the people that I have in my team to really shift the dial on recognising that we need a different mindset and a different way of behaving has been super exciting, and that's motivated me massively. We've changed the shape of our organisation a couple of years ago. We had to restructure because we were in a new environment. That was very, very challenging. But equally, I was very happy with the fact that we did manage to deliver that. And whilst it was perhaps painful for our people at the time, the majority of our people secured very good jobs, and they were able to progress their careers by doing that because they took on different job roles. So that I find really motivational. I love working with my team, and I like being able to deliver on our people strategy, which focuses on empowering individuals, focuses on leaders, focuses on the cultural change in our organisation, the career and professional development people can get here, and also making sure that this is a really, really attractive employer. And we work really hard on what that employee experience feels like as well, super hard on that through each of my areas in my team. And that I find exciting. And then I'm quite expressive, as you can tell, so I love the opportunity for my team to be able to promote that great work and then get the recognition for it.
Yeah. And what advice would you give to, say, women that are maybe mid-career or struggling with having the confidence to go for the role they really want or looking to come into the industry?
confidence is a really funny thing, isn't it? Because, you know, there's been many times in my career where I've not felt particularly confident. I guess what I've done is tuned into my sense of fairness, actually. And that would be what I would try and encourage people to think about, is question why you're not the right person to be considered. And what difference do you have? And don't look around the existing cohort that might be your comparators in terms of the roles that you're trying to go for, but think about what the value of the difference is that you can bring to those roles.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we have at the moment is more of the same. We want more that's different. And as a woman, you can bring that.
I've really enjoyed chatting with you, Penny, and I've seen the work that you're doing, and that's one of the reasons why I got in touch with you initially. And I've learned a lot about the groundbreaking work that Volkswagen are doing as well around supporting women in the workplace. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we finish?
I don't think so, to be honest, Rosie. It's been an absolute delight talking to you, so thank you. I'm really looking forward to the new partnership that we are going to have together.
Brilliant, thank you. And that was Penny Weatherup, People Director at Volkswagen Group UK.
This is Modern Woman. Find us at modernwoman.co for further info.